podcast features Dr. James Weaver, the Director of Performing Arts and Sports for the National Federation of State High School Associations. The National Federation of State High School Associations is based in Indianapolis, Indiana, and is the national leader and advocate for high school athletics as well as fine and performing arts programs. With 51 member state associations, including Washington, D.C., they serve over 19,000 high schools and more than 12 million young people. The Federation's goal is to ensure that all students have an opportunity to enjoy healthy participation, achievement, and good sportsmanship in education-based activities. Dr. Weaver has been the Director of Performing Arts and Sports for the past 4 years and will discuss the importance of extracurricular activities for students.
So when we start looking at speech and debate and theater activities, those are, let's get you guys communicating, let's get you working as a team, let's get you doing high-level research, let's get you putting all that into action and then competing with those things in order to become a better person as you start entering the economy later on in your life.
His own involvement in high school and college activities.
And I picked the bass because it was the weirdest thing ever. It was huge, and I'm like, I want to play that one. And my teacher's like, why the bass? And I was like, it's the biggest instrument. Why would you not want to play that thing? It's awesome. And then I ended up falling in love with it and just really started excelling a little bit in middle school, and then in high school really became a solid player. And I found who I was in the music classroom. So I knew, like, you know, there's a really rich amount of history that exists in music, and then just bringing some of that history to life through performance. And it was amazing for me.
How organizations are navigating during the COVID-19 coronavirus era.
And so we're watching a lot of states push back where their starting points are for their activity programs, both athletically and performing arts-wise.
And the preliminary groundbreaking results from a study of aerosol spread during performing arts activities.
So they were like, well, let's look at everything we know about music and performing arts stuff and how aerosol is generated. We found nothing, not one article anywhere about how music or performing arts generates aerosols. And so like, okay, well, we need to figure this out. So we need to figure out, one, how they do it, how much they do, and then what can we do to stop it?
This podcast was created by JFY Networks, a Boston-based nonprofit provider of remote learning programs to schools, students, and parents. JFY's individualized self-paced curriculum help raise individual and school performance measures by maintaining grade-level skills and combating learning loss. JFY provides online ELA and math curricula aligned to state and college standards from grade 6 through high school, with personal support online and via phone from friendly learning specialists like yours truly. For JFY Networks, I'm Greg Cunningham. As schools across Massachusetts and the country struggle with plans for academic programs in the fall, one important aspect of education has not been widely discussed: the importance of co-curricular and performing arts courses and activities, which are essential components of education, as Dr. Weaver explains.
Yeah, so extracurricular activities are vitally important to the development and education of the student because we review that as the second half of the school day. So you're going to get your basic core instruction of your math, your English, your sciences during the school day. But what our activities really do is they show leadership, they show teamwork, they show the soft skills that are needed by today's economy. And that's why extracurriculars are really important. So when we start looking at speech and debate and theater activities, those are, let's get you guys communicating, let's get you working as a team, let's get you doing high-level research, let's get you putting all that into action and then competing with those things in order to become a better person as you start entering the economy later on in your life. When we start looking at the same thing happens in music, same thing happens in athletics. You learn those abilities to work together. You learn those abilities to create leadership opportunities up and down the spectrum. So you don't have to be the team captain to have a leadership role. You could be, I am the best researcher on the debate team for what we're trying to find. Or, you know, for if I'm on the basketball team, I know what my role is and how I can lead in there and work together with the other students that we're with. So extracurricular activities become very important because it provides those opportunities that we may not be able to find for students inside the school day. And that's really where it goes. And for the budgetary impact of what extracurriculars are, it's a really big bargain for how much money we sink into these programs as far as the overall school budget and the bang for the dollar we get out of it for what we're providing to the country in civic engagement and in economic output.
Dr. Weaver's experience with co-curricular activities not only helped him prepare for his director job, which he currently holds, but also provided a more well-rounded educational experience.
You know, I started playing an orchestra in fourth grade, and I picked the bass because it was the weirdest thing ever. It was huge, and I'm like, I want to play that one. And my teacher's like, why the bass? And I was like, it's the biggest instrument. Why would you not want to play that thing? It's awesome. And then I ended up falling in love with it and just really, you know, kind of started excelling a little bit in middle school. And then in high school, I really became a solid player. And I found who I was in the music classroom. So I knew, like, you know, there's a really rich amount of history that exists in music. And then just bringing some of that history to life through performance. And it was amazing for me as a high school student, just trying to start transformation. Started transformation that way, where then we get into college, where it became because I became a very big fish in a very small pond and growing up in northeastern South Dakota. So then I went to a music performance college and realized, I have a lot more I can be doing to make myself better than this. And so it was a really good life lesson for me that as soon as you think you're the best at what you're doing, someone's going to prove you wrong. And I think that was a great lesson for me to learn throughout the course of activities. And high school for me was pretty easy academically. I graduated 23rd out of 458 students. So, and I didn't really try. College, on the other hand, I had to try a lot. That was a whole different ball game. But I do attest a lot of that to what I experienced in the music classroom as far as, you know, realizing, hey, there are people out there that are ready to prove me wrong at any moment in time. And that is very true in debate too. We were very good in debate. When in my last year debating was back when the topic was the reform topic for education back in the early 2000s. And we had a great argument about how we're just going to require all incoming freshmen to take a forensics class. Because who's going to go up there and be like, debate is bad? And so we were like wiping it up all over the place until somebody actually came and told us why it was bad. And we're like, we have no defense for this. And we got swapped up so quick. It was ridiculous. But, you know, again, a great experience to realize you can't just lean on just one thing to try to get you to be successful. So yeah, it was good. High school activities, really, they do provide a lot of those lifelong lessons that you can rely on for a long time.
The COVID-19 coronavirus has wreaked havoc not only with scheduling students for instruction for the fall, but also with all sports and co-curricular activities across the country. As with their approach returning to school and even the virus itself, each state is navigating its own course through these complex issues.
They're all over the map right now. So we have several states that have pushed back all fall activities for a couple of reasons. One, you can't get spectators in there. We don't know if we're able to get a big enough crowd size gathered up in certain states to have the teams play. And in indoor activities, such as our performing arts activities, those require huge, massive spaces for huge amounts of people. And we're not able to get to that point yet. And so we're watching a lot of states push back where their starting points are for their activity programs, both athletically and performing arts wise. And it's interesting to see how we're progressing to move forward. So every state is a little bit different, like we've reacted to this entire pandemic. And that's a different topic for a different day, probably. But without a national approach to containing the pandemic, we end up having a very checkerboard and fractured approach to how we're doing this. So there's about a dozen states that are going to go on as scheduled until they can no longer go on as scheduled. We've got about the same amount of states, maybe a few more that have pushed everything into after the winter break. And then we have the rest of them that are kind of somewhere in between, right? So we've pushed back maybe football or some of those bigger close contact activities. And then we've kind of moved other ones forward. So like we know golf is good. So you can socially distance in golf and you're outside. So those kinds of things we've seen kind of move forward in the schedule to try to get those activities forward. Well, we've watched some of the bigger kind of what I call the mass body activities have moved backwards. And so within the calendar. And so we'll see where that all goes. Economically, you know, it's one of those things where state associations are going to have some issues to deal with because we're used to a certain rhythm and flow of what our year looks like. And that has been definitely disrupted throughout the course of all of this. But most of our associations are in pretty good shape. And, you know, associations like the Speech Association of Massachusetts figured out, let's run these things on a virtual format. And so there are some very innovative and clever people out there doing some amazing things to keep kids participating. And so we're kind of relying on that as well across the different states.
Co-curricular activities are not just fun moments during a student's day, but vital to the educational well-being and success for all students. So far, fall schedules for these activities have seen minimal impacts due to funding issues for states. But financial support for co-curricular activities may be essential later in this academic year in order for schools to continue participation.
So the state associations themselves probably wouldn't get those dollars. They'd get it through like the participation aspects of the schools. In that case, it's very important, right? Because we want to make sure students are participating in those activities. What we don't want to see is kind of a stopping of students participating and having that gap year. You can't see my quotes on the podcast, but I'm doing big air quotes. You don't have that gap year without participating, because we know that as students participate in high school activity programs, their graduation rates go up, their ACT scores and SAT scores go up, their ability to get college scholarships in things not just activity related, but overall related go up when they're involved in high school activity programs. And we would really hate to see kind of that lost class that doesn't get to participate. And so those dollars coming from the schools, even though they are important, the bigger importance is that the participation levels continue to, or the participation levels don't drop off too much as we progress farther into the school year.
In order to keep the virus from spreading within school communities, state organizations and schools have had to be creative in order to ensure some level of participation will be possible as the academic year begins, and also heading into winter and spring seasons.
Really, on the athletic end, we're looking at a lot of modifications during the scheduling. What can we do to kind of maybe push this back until we get better control of it? Or what can we do, like in the golf setting, right? Like, can we just do, instead of foursomes doing golfing, can we do twosomes doing golfing and spread those students out farther to kind of keep those programs going? In our world of the performing arts area, we have like speech, debate, music. Theater is a little bit more tricky, but in those other three, what can we do to get them virtual? Because, for example, I live in Indiana. Indiana has tens upon tens of thousands of students participating in the music programs. So what can they do, like for the state level programs? So what can they do to continue that on, and how does that work in a virtual format? And then we get into what copyright issues we have to deal with, which is a thing. And then what do we do to make sure that students have a safe online environment to compete in, and all of those kinds of thought processes we need to go in there. And that's what we're seeing a lot of our performing arts area activities do when they are going online, you know, so, but it's working for them so far. And they're trying to keep their schedule intact as much as they can. The other interesting part about that too is, what do you do, which I think is something that's important for people to think about. What do you do when we have schools in session and we want to host a state marching band or a one-act play festival or a debate tournament? So kids can go to their school, but we have no host school to host these festivals and contests. And that's where we're seeing some of our focus on the online aspect go to, is what that looks like. So can we figure out a way with, like, we have an NFHS network, for example, can we figure out a way to broadcast all those different components so that way adjudicators can see what these things are doing, get them adjudicated, get them the state assessment levels that a lot of states rely on, get those evaluations back to the schools, and then continue the cycle of what we normally do. And so we're trying to figure out some of those things as well.
However, the modifications forced by the COVID-19 coronavirus have provided some benefits for certain activities as they adapt and move to more online-focused experiences.
So one of the things that we have is that because school budgets are going to be constricted as we move forward, right now we kind of got through this fall unscathed, but we'll see if that continues to happen as we progress in the next budgetary cycle for most states. So one thing it does is it prevents travel, which is good. Other benefits are you're able to, like an example of a debate round, if you can't go to all stretches of your particular state, now you can virtually. So you can debate students you've never been able to debate physically before because those constraints are now gone. Does it feel the same? Not really, but does it work? We've proven several times in Massachusetts, for example, in the state tournament, that yeah, these things really do work and people do have meaningful debates coming out of those virtual tournaments. It also takes away some of the individual economic barriers, right? So, you know, can a student dress the way they're supposed to dress? Can they get themselves there on time? Can they have enough money to buy food for their lunches and all that stuff? Well, if you take away all of the things that would require those kind of purchases to do an online tournament, those things become a lot easier for more students to access. However, I will say that there is great benefit into having those on those in-person tournaments that come on and say, all right, here's what this looks like, and here's how we do, and here's what happens when you debate in front of a crowd. Because debating in front of an audience is far different than debating in front of a computer screen. And so the same thing goes for playing volleyball and playing football and doing your basketball tournament and having a concert, right? Like playing a concert in front of an empty auditorium is not the same as having 1,000 people in a packed auditorium who are just there. And then when you play the last note and the audience erupts and the holy crap, they did it moment, those are meaningful moments. And so as I think, even though we can do some online things, I don't know if it's a permanent solution, because we as humans are social folks, and we want to make sure that some of that social aspect comes back to our development of our young people.
Even as these activities recreate themselves as part of a new normal, the modifications present new and different challenges to navigate, such as copyright issues when performing arts activities move online.
Yeah, so last spring, we were very fortunate to get a lot of the publishers, both in literature and in music, to give us permissions to allow distance assessment and competition to still occur throughout all of our state associations, which was great. And those permissions were needed because of how copyright law is written. It's very, very complex. So we had to have an ability for students to say, all right, I can upload it on a YouTube format, but I can't get it onto a different kind of format because of how the upload structure exists. And you don't really need a lot of bandwidth to upload something to YouTube. And so we were like, how can we make some things happen? So we still wanted to be restrictive as possible, but allow state assessments and adjudications to go through, and then also allow students to compete in certain areas of literature competition, so speaking events and whatnot. And we were very fortunate to get, I want to say, the big 6 or 7 music publishers and about the big 15 of literature publishers to agree to allow us to have those permissions for student assessments, which was great. Now, coming into the fall, we're trying to get some of those back. But as we mentioned before, everything is so crazy across the country, and it's so different that it's a little bit harder of a sell for publishers to say, here's a nationwide blanket statement, kind of do what you need to do to get through, because some states are almost all back in person, just waiting to see what happens. Some states are only online. Some states are combinations of those two. And then even within the combinations of those two, there's multiple combinations that exist within the combinations. And so it's harder for us to find a sweet spot for the copyright permissions. We're still working on it, but you know, the publishers have really been good for our associations and our students moving through the pandemic and trying to navigate what they can do. We need to also make sure that we are thankful and understanding that when this is all done, that some things are going to have to go back to how they were before, and we need to just kind of navigate what that river is going to look like as we get through the pandemic.
But silver linings abound, as playwrights and publishing companies have also adapted to the new normal.
Which is incredible, right? Like, who would have thought 8 months ago we'd be talking about Zoom play performances happening for schools? I mean, it's crazy.
With the goal of providing guidance to both state associations and schools, Dr. Weaver began to research how aerosol spray would spread during speaking performances and the use of wind-based musical instruments, and discovered no real research had ever been conducted. He set out to spearhead a study which, still in its early stages, has already provided groundbreaking results, which will help schools and organizations when making decisions about the safety of some co-curricular activities.
So what we did was Mark Speed, who's the director, or he's the president of the College Band Directors National Association. He had this idea, like, back in early April, we need to study aerosol. And he called me up. He's like, you're pretty connected. What can we do? I want to figure this problem out. And I sat there and I'm like, oh, I think you might be right. Like, I don't know if this, because at the time it's all about contact contagion, right? Like, surfaces are clean and all that. But then as we keep seeing the spread go, even though like everything is being doused with sanitizer, we're still watching this thing spread around like crazy. And so Mark and I really kind of sat down and was like, yeah, I think this might actually be the deal. What can we do? And then, so we started doing a lot of research. Between the two of us, we read over 170 articles in a week on how aerosol spread, what we knew about COVID-19, you know, how everything was crazy. And we're like, it has to be aerosol, but we just don't know. So then we're like, well, let's look at everything we know about music and performing arts stuff and how aerosol is generated. We found nothing, not one article anywhere about how music or performing arts generates aerosols. And so like, okay, well, we need to figure this out. So we need to figure out, one, how they do it, how much they do, and then what can we do to stop them? And we all still need to figure this out in like 5 weeks. So here we are. We contacted University of Colorado Boulder and Dr. Shelley Miller, who's a brilliant environmental scientist. Her specialty is indoor environmental pollution, allergen, viral, and bacterial transmission. So right up what we needed to have happen. And she's like, yeah, there's really not a lot out there. Love to see what happens. So we're like, great. Let's put this together in a budget. So put it together in a budget, and the first budget came out like $37,000. Like, all right, I think we can figure this out, right? This isn't bad. And then we were talking longer, and we're like, well, we need to duplicate this study. Okay, so we'll just double the cost, right? So we're at 70-some thousand. And then we contact University of Maryland, and Maryland's like, yeah, this is great, but have you guys thought about this, 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 and this? We're like, no, we should do all those things. So now we escalate up to about $200,000. And then we get into this thing. So we finally solidify everything we want to do. We're like, all right, here's our master wish list. What can you do? And they're like, well, ask me about $300,000 from the two institutions. We're like, whoa, all right, let's see what we can do. So we put out a call to everyone that Mark and I knew, and then started branching out like crazy for funders. And we were very fortunate to get a National Association of Music Merchants matching grant for research. And they matched up to $120,000. And we had raised $318,000 in 22 days, which was amazing. And it's 125 different organizations have come together to support and fund this study. It's an international coalition. So we have a lot of groups in the United States because we're kind of spearheading it. And we have the International Music Association, a bunch of other places from Europe, some places from Asia. And it has just taken on a life of its own. It has been the largest consortium of performing arts groups that has ever been put together, which is incredible. And they've all come together to solve this problem of how to get students back into performing arts programs. So let me fast forward into the research. And on research, what we have found is the brief version. I can really dive into some big charts and graphs and stuff, but we can't do that on a radio show. So the brief version is we found out that everything in performing arts, so whether it's acting, speaking, debating, playing of a musical instrument, minus the strings, produce about the same amount of aerosol, with the exception of the oboe. The oboe produces so much more, it's ridiculous. However, the mitigation for everything is also the same and brings the oboe back down to where the rest of the instruments are. So everything we do in performing arts is more than conversational talking, but less than coughing. So inside of that spectrum. And so if we think of coughing as being really, really bad, we know everything we do in performing arts is less than that, including singing and playing band instruments and acting and those kind of things. But we also know it's a lot worse than if you and I were just sitting in a room talking together. So then we really started focusing on what does it do to mitigate that? And so we went to an indoor environmental engineering principle, keep all issues as close to the source as possible. So we started doing the whole masking everything component. What if we masked students? What if we cut a slit in a mask for brass and woodwind players? What if we masked the instruments? What do we do for acting? How do we mask that? First of all, acting is really hard. You can only see half of your face. So people are going to be really good eye actors going forward. You know, how does debate, how do we make sure that when we do that, we don't get, you know, kind of a tired jaw issue that occurs? Because I know TMJ wearing masks with people who have to talk a lot in a mask becomes a really, really big issue. So we're kind of going down those routes as well. So we found that if we mask the students and mask the instruments, keep social distancing at 6 foot by 6 foot squares, like the CDC recommends, increase the air change rates as fast as we can within any given room, keep our normal hygiene components that the CDC has been saying since March we need to be doing, and then limit our amount of time that we're in rehearsals, we feel we can't eliminate the risk, but we can reduce it down enough where if your school is in session, there's no point, all of your performing arts stuff should also be in session, because we believe the mitigations we have collected so far bring it down, so it should be about as risky as your math class. And that was really our goal. We still have more study to do, but we're pretty confident that the direction we're taking is on there. So for example, in band, you have to wear a mask with a slit in it for the mouthpiece to go in to connect to the armature. And that's your performance mask. And then when you're done playing, you take that mask off, you put on your normal mask and you leave the classroom. And then we're recommending bell covers for all woodwind and brass instruments that have a MERV 13 filter material on the inside of that bell cover. MERV 13 is hospital grade level filter material. And so we're filtering out pretty much everything that goes through there. And then we add in HEPA filters and those kinds of things. And we can really make the environment safer by keeping as much of the issue at the source, which is our human bodies, as humanly possible.
While the study has already provided some reassurances for schools, there is still more work and further research to be done.
So right now, what we know what the general emission rates are. We know where the aerosol is coming out of each instrument. So now the next component of study is refine all of those things. And then we're also developing a tool that University of Colorado has developed for a lot of different areas. But this tool, you could then go in and say, all right, so I have, you know, five trumpets, and I have X amount of bassoons and this many trombones. You can plug all those numbers into a formula, and it'll tell you what your risk level is based on the size of your room, the size of your ensemble, what your instrumentation is, and then how many students would be in the room that could potentially be infected. We want to shoot for one, right? Because we're hopefully doing a good job of quarantining and isolating people away. But if we have one asymptomatic student in there, what would be the risk of that spreading? And so we really want to make sure that we can refine that down. And that's one of the next steps we're going to do, is real specific emission rates, not just the general aerosol, which we have now. Because our goal for the first run was, let's get this done and let's find out what we can do to get people back in the classroom, because we know there's going to be schools starting back up. And we want to make sure we can do that as safely as possible. And so that was our goal one, is what can we do to make sure we know where it's coming from, we know how to stop it. Now we're going to get really more refining emission rates to get better modeling out there. We're going to produce a lot more models through CFD imagery that can really show what the spread over time will be and where it will go in a room based on how its air circulation is developed and those kinds of things. So we're really just kind of working on a lot of refinement now. And then we're also going to be testing different materials to say, all right, so we know that we went really restrictive with the MERV 13 because we know that stops everything. But that's not necessarily practical in the long term. So we want to be like, all right, so what other materials are out there that will be effective? We'll have less issues of decibel decreases, less issue of changes in timbre of the instrument, you know, those kinds of things. And also when we get into the speaking side of the world, are there alternates to figuring out what to do and then just having your face half covered? Because when your face is half covered with theatrical performance, it really causes a problem. We're also going to be doing simulated aerobic exercise to see what happens in the athletic field as well, to see what that spread looks like and if there's a difference there.
What matters most to Dr. Weaver is that all students have opportunities which help to develop not just their educational skills, but real life skills, which are an essential element for each and every career in all fields of employment.
Well, I would remind, especially those business world folks, you know, remember when your time back in high school, when you were in high school activity programs, what did those programs mean to you? How did they shape where the direction of your life ended up going? And I think that you'll find most of your listeners were involved in some sort of a high school activity program in one way, shape, or form. They may not have been the high-level varsity folks. They may have dropped the program here or there. But those programs still had an influence on their lives and where they went. What we're trying to do here now in this time of uncertainty is get students to have those experiences and have those interactions that get them set for where they're going in life. And I think that as we look at our education as a whole, those activity programs are very important for doing everything that the soft skills require for us to be successful at as we become adults in the world. So I just want to put that plug out as the importance of what those high school activity programs are. Athletic, performing arts, combination of the two, which is what I really hope to have happen. That's why my kids are in cross country and band and orchestra and tennis, and they just do all those things because it's important for them to get out there and do those. And then I think, too, one thing they should remember as well is our educators are incredible problem solvers. They know the importance of education yesterday. They know exactly how important it is today, and they know exactly how important it's going to be tomorrow. And those problem solvers in our classrooms will figure it out, and they'll ensure that our students have still a high class of education and a great experience in the activities that they choose to participate in. And I'm very excited to see how we're going to be doing that moving forward.
We would like to thank Dr. James Weaver, the Director of Performing Arts and Sports for the National Federation of State High School Associations, for joining us this month on the JFY Networks podcast. If you have any questions or comments, please navigate to our website, www.jfynet.org, where you will also find our new Connected Learning page, outlining the array of resources provided by JFY Learning Specialists. Thank you for listening to this podcast. I'm Greg Cunningham. This has been a production of JFY Networks.